It's Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's news radio.
Remember, the Bruins keep rolling, and as do the Celtics. Both Boston winter teams could be a great spring here in Boston from a point of view of pro sports teams. We're talking and finishing up our conversation on the Royals coming to Boston tomorrow. The Prince and Princess of Wales, Prince William and Princess Kate Middleton. And Gail was kind enough to hold over for me. I'm always interested in what Gail has to say. Gail, how excited are you about this arrival tomorrow?
I'm not really particularly excited. I did, though, 1976, I went to see Queen Elizabeth, and I remember being on my father's shoulders. I was just a little kid, and I remember her being on the balcony of the State House.
Yes.
And I remember her being in that limo, and I think it was the mayor, they were standing up through the moon roof of a, yes, of a limo, and she had like a bluish greenish dress on, and she was waving everybody. I just remember that. So
I remember too. I was a rookie television reporter in 1976 for Channel 4, and
wow,
it was one of the highlights of the summer. You might remember that the tall ships had come to Boston. They
yep,
first docked in Newport, Rhode Island, then they came up to Boston, and then the Queen arrived along with Prince Philip, and we were kind of in a lockdown position right across from Faneuil Hall, where they had a big platform set up, Kevin White and all
oh,
of that.
Geez,
yeah, there was some funny stories. My friend George Regan told the story that I guess Kevin White had ordered, you know, per the British Embassy, some specific wines that the Queen liked and that Prince Philip liked. And they had a reception in City Hall. And apparently, when she arrived that morning, and Mayor White said, you know, could we get you something to drink, Your Majesty? And she said, I'd like a gin and tonic. And the mayor, there was no gin, there was no tonic. And so he dispatched George Regan, who then was his media press secretary, downstairs, and George commandeered a couple of Boston police officers on motorcycle to get to the nearest bar that was open and fetch a gin and tonic for the Queen. and that's a true story. But she had her gin and tonic at, you know, 10:30, 11 o'clock in the morning, which is a great way to start the day because, of course, at 10:30 in the morning in Boston, English time, it's like 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon.
Right. And gin and tonic is very popular in Great Britain. It's a very British drink.
Yes.
So I think you answered like the question earlier, and I thought, oh, no. And I was going to ask you, would it be in poor taste if William and Kate were shown two spots, the spot where the Boston Massacre took place between the colonials and the British, and maybe the Paul Revere house, because Paul Revere, wasn't he the guy that ran around on the horse yelling out, the British are coming,
yes,
the British
he
are coming?
Was.
No pun intended, by the way. But, you know, I mean, I figured the Boston Massacre spot, and we have no sour grapes between us and the British. So I figured the Boston Massacre spot in the Paul Revere house, that's what I would show them.
No, I think so. Yeah, Paul Revere was the guy who was running around, you know, on the night of 1775, telling everyone the British are coming. And I kind of feel like I'm doing what Paul Revere did, except I've got a microphone and a bigger audience telling the royals are coming. So I feel I'm kind of channeling Paul Revere tonight. And also, my Irish roots are feeling a little uncomfortable being in such proximity to the Prince and Princess of Wales in view of what they did to my people back in the 19th century. Well, all over Ireland. And do you know, here's a fact that's interesting. Do you know that Ireland is the only country in Europe whose population today is less than it was, or fewer, they have fewer people in Ireland than they did in 1850, the only country? I mean, the country was devastated by that. And I'm thinking that maybe I could get a little bit of reparations. You know, I would...
Wait a minute, repeat that again? There's less people in Ireland now than there were in the 1800s?
Yep, in 1850,
okay,
before the potato
okay
famine. Yep. You can look
okay
it up.
Well, now, I believe you. I believe you. Anyway, those are my two spots that I would show them.
Well, Those would be great spots, and maybe they could learn a little history. Obviously, the Boston Massacre. We know Crispus Atticus, one of the first men to die in the cause of freedom and liberty, right here in Boston, a black American. So, they could be reminded of that as well. So yeah, Gail, as always, lovely to hear from you. Thank you so much. Appreciate you taking the time to call tonight.
Have a good night.
You too. Hope you guys down in Scituate had a nice Thanksgiving. I'm sure you did.
We did.
All right. Thanks. Talk to you soon. Right, have a great one.
Bye-bye.
All right. We are going to change topics. And the reason that I was able to take a call during the top of this hour is that my guest that's coming up is due to join us at 9:15. But let me just kind of set the story up. We had the big bank robbery down in Martha's Vineyard. So now a couple of weeks ago, and there's been some progress on that bank robbery. It appears that if the people who have been taken into custody were actually involved in the robbery, one of them was arrested yesterday in New Haven, Connecticut, which is sort of interesting, had gotten off the island somehow in the wake of the robbery. This is the Rockland Trust robbery that we're talking about in Martha's Vineyard. And the other man who was arrested on the island, who allegedly was the getaway car driver, Miguel Jones, a Jamaican professional soccer player who I guess works as a landscaper down on Martha's Vineyard. So it prompted us to say, Let's do something on bank robberies, and we're going to be talking after the break with our guest who has just joined us. He teaches at Boston University Questrom School of Business. BU professor Jay Zagorski will join us. He has studied bank robberies, and he's got a lot of great information. So stay with us. If you ever have thought about robbing a bank, you may pick up a tip or two. Remember, earlier this year, I had my now departed friend, Francis Morgan, who spent 20 years in federal prison for a series of bank robberies. We had him on the show in March. And people who rob banks, they're a different breed of cat. Let me put it to you that way. And we'll take a break, and we'll be back with Professor Jay. My guest who will join us is, as I mentioned before, I just want to emphasize it, he is a business professor at BU's Questrom School of Business. Professor Jay Zagorski will join us, and he has a lot of information about bank robberies, and you may have some questions or some comments and observations yourself. We'll talk about this all the way until 10 o'clock. At least that's the game plan here on Nightside. My name is Dan Ray. The numbers you know, 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030, 617-931-1030.
You're on Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's news radio.
Well, we're going to talk about bank robberies. This is the second hour here in 2022 that we have focused on bank robberies. As I mentioned last March, we spent an hour talking with Francis Morgan, who had been a correspondent with me from several federal prisons around the country. He kept me up to date on the rumors, the grapevine rumors at that time. When he was in stir, Whitey Bulger was also in federal prison, and so he kept me up to date. And then he got out early this year after having served 20 years for a series of bank robberies. And I learned a lot about bank robberies from him. But tonight we're going to learn a lot about bank robberies from Boston University Questrom School of Business professor, Professor Jay Zagorski. Professor, welcome. You are fresh out of the classroom. You were teaching tonight up until just a few minutes ago.
I was. The students really enjoyed that I had to leave class 5 minutes early to be on the show. So,
oh, yeah. I'm sure they were heartbroken. I know exactly what that feeling is, but I hope some of them are listening. So let's start off with the most recent bank robbery, which has gotten so much publicity. And as some, you've studied this, and I know that you're not here to give people tips, but there's a lot of information that you have about the best time of day or whatever, or during the week. And, you know, we're not in no way, shape, or form are we advocating anyone should rob banks. But they're kind of a different breed of criminal, don't you think?
They are. They tend to be some of the smarter criminals around. And I was kind of confused by the Martha's Vineyard robbery that you're referring to that happened on November 17th.
Why would that be?
because the goal in bank robbery is to steal as much money as possible.
Yes.
And they broke into this bank on a Thursday morning off-season. And banks tend to have a lot of money, at least the Martha's Vineyard banks, when there's a lot of people in Martha's Vineyard. There are very few people in Martha's Vineyard in November and December.
But the good part off-season. About it, Professor, let me give you the yin and the yang here. Have you ever tried to drive to the ferry in the middle of the summer? I mean, it's brutal.
I'll be honest, Dan, I ride a bike quite a bit, and I've always bicycled to the ferry, put the bike on the ferry, so I've never had the problem.
Well, I'm just saying, maybe they thought they could make a quicker getaway. I don't know. I guess you have to balance off, you know, the points you're making. I just wanted to throw that out there because, you know, it's. I can just imagine, like, on the 4th of July weekend, you're wearing those dumb masks, and you're trying to get a ride to the ferry, and be kind of tough. But go ahead. I interrupted. I didn't mean to do that. Go ahead.
We'll go back to money in a moment, Dan. But
yes.
What I saw in the news, and I do not know these criminals, but I have been following the story quite closely, is they actually saw two of them get on the ferry. So doing it in the off-season, they can watch the camera footage because so few people were getting on and off the ferry. And they know most of the locals, what they look like.
Mm.
So when you have two people who, you know, sort of are kind of touristy, it's pretty easy to pick them out. In the peak of the summer season,
you know more about this than I do. I didn't know. That's a piece of information I did not know. How were they able to discern who they were?
The story that I read in the news is that they actually saw these people. There's a Stop and Shop across from the ferry.
Yes.
And they actually saw them, you know, go to their car after buying the tickets, which they paid cash for, which makes sense since they just robbed a bank.
Yes.
And they waited in the car, and then they walked on the ferry. You know, when there's not that many people, you can scan all the CCTV camera footage and pick some of these people out. But Dan,
okay,
let me
so
go
they
back.
Have a pretty they have a pretty good idea. The first guy they arrested was the driver of the getaway car with,
mm-hmm.
without the one hubcap on his car.
Right, right.
So
and that was from the camera footage from the bus. There was a Martha's Vineyard bus that was driving around with its camera on, in case there was an accident, so they could actually see all these kind of things.
Mm.
When there's very few people and there's a lot of cameras watching things, it's pretty easy to roll back the footage and see what's going on.
So they made two mistakes. One, they should have done it at a different time of year, hit it at a different time.
Yeah, not only a different time of year. Banks don't want to have a lot of cash for a couple of reasons. One, it reduces the chance of robbery.
Right.
But also, you don't want to tempt your employees. You don't want to have a teller looking at $1 million, you know?
Yeah.
That way, you want to reduce those kind of thefts as much as possible from both internal and external
reasons. The nuns used to call that an occasion of sin.
Yeah, an occasion of sin. We definitely won't have that occasion of sin. But when do people cash checks, Dan? I would say the end of the month or on Fridays.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
Breaking into the bank on a Thursday morning in the middle of the month in an off season, especially as there's three of them, so you have to divide the loot three ways.
As well as the getaway car driver, he's got to get a piece of it. It looks like he only got $300 though.
And it seemed to have left that in the car too.
Well, I think that they found that in the car of the getaway car. I assume that was the money for the getaway car driver. And also, once they had the getaway car driver, I assumed that they might have squeezed him a little bit. You know, hey, what were you doing the other day?
That I'm not privy to.
No, but I understand that. And I'm sure he probably asked for a lawyer. And at that point, they would have given him his Miranda rights and dummied up. But, you know, he might have voluntarily said, hey, I've never robbed. I was only the driver. Oh, really? You know, you never know. So we don't think the feeling at this point is obviously then, you know, you mentioned me today that the second guy who they arrested, yes, was it earlier this week, Omar Johnson of Canterbury, New Hampshire, was picked up in New Haven, Connecticut.
New Haven. And not only was he picked up, he was arrested by the Connecticut State Police, Massachusetts State Police, the FBI, and Tisbury Police. And if you're in Connecticut driving your car and you see the Tisbury Police behind you, you know the gig's up.
Yeah.
Right?
You probably have a pretty good sense of it at that point. So your sense is that these guys were not, you know, they were not the best bank robbers in history. They gave it their best shot. But Massachusetts has had a tradition of having some big bank robberies. I mean, I think back to the Brinks robbery, which predated me, but I think about the Depositors Trust over in Medford, which Whitey Bulger, I think, had a hand in to one degree or another. We used to have some mighty fine bank robbers, but
But bank robbery really is going out of fashion. A quick example: 20 years ago, we had over 300 bank robberies a year in Massachusetts.
Wow!
Today, almost
one a day.
Yeah, almost one a day. In 2021, we haven't finished 2022 yet. We had just 58 bank robberies here in Massachusetts.
About one a week.
Yeah, about one a week.
Yeah, when you
and if because Dan, your listeners come from all over, including all over New England. Last year, there were only bank robberies in Connecticut and Massachusetts. Rhode Island, no bank robberies. Maine, no bank robberies. Vermont, no bank robberies. New Hampshire, no bank robberies. So bank robberies are really going out of style. And it's not just here in New England, Dan. It's all over the country. There was a peak in 1991. We had 9,000 bank robberies in that year. Last year, 2021, only 1,700. Five times fewer bank robberies.
Wait a second, what was that? In 1991, how many bank
1991, robberies? There were over 9,000 bank robberies.
Yeah.
Last year, 1,700.
So what's
it's
happening?
Factor of five.
What has happened to the industry? I mean, is it are people not, you know, it used to be that my listeners in Charlestown, I'm sure will either agree with me or they'll be upset with what I'm saying, but Charlestown had a rich history of people who were, you know, young men who were bank robbers.
So we oftentimes say crime doesn't pay.
Yes.
And in bank robberies, this is true. Let me give you just a couple of numbers.
Okay.
The average bank robber right now who's behind bars is serving an 80-month sentence. If you steal from a bank by stealing credit cards, debit cards, or other electronic means of transactions like ATM cards, the average sentence, 28 months. 80 months down to 28 months.
Yeah, better deal, sure.
But not only is it a better deal behind bars, how much money do you get away with? Last year, the typical bank robber got just a little over $4,000. The typical person who was stealing credit cards or ATM cards or things like that, they made off with $60,000. So,
whoa.
I mean, you're making a lot more money by stealing things electronically, and you serve a much lower jail time if they catch you.
Has the security of banks gotten better over time, you know, in terms of more cameras, armed guards? I mean, every once in a while you hear of some armored truck getting hit, like the Brinks truck back in 1950. But
The FBI records Brinks trucks robberies and other armored car robberies, and they're still happening. They're still happening. Though what's kind of funny is thinking about when these people on Martha's Vineyard stole, most of the armored cars get hit on Mondays or Fridays because that's when they're transporting most of the cash to the banks.
Yeah.
They're not really being hit on Thursdays because there's not a lot of armored cars delivering money. And that makes sense because when do people get paid? They get paid on Fridays. When do they want money? They want money on weekends.
I want to continue our conversation. We have a news break coming up here at the bottom of the hour. But just in defense of the Martha's Vineyard bank robbers who, you know, on the surface, it looks like they weren't the brightest guys in the room. But what I'm wondering is maybe they picked Thursday so they would not have the embarrassment of robbing a bank while another bank robbery was ongoing. Is that possible?
I'll tell you after the break.
Okay. We'll take a break. 617-254-1030, 888-929-1030, 617-931-1030. I'm just trying to reestablish the bona fides of the Martha's Vineyard bank robbers, but that's, you know, I'm having a tough time doing it. Love to have you join the conversation. If you ever robbed a bank, if you've ever been in a bank robbery and you'd like to share that story with us, we'd love to hear from you. But again, if you want to ask a question about bank robberies, I learned a lot about bank robberies from my friend Francis Morgan, who I interviewed, and some of you might remember him last March. And sadly, he was dealing with ill health at the time. But he wanted to tell a story, and he basically is telling the same story that Professor Zagorski of the Boston University School of Business. The title of the group is the Questrom School of Business at Boston University. And he basically said the same thing, that in retrospect, he made a mistake. He was a house painter who one morning got up, didn't like his job anymore, and decided that day to rob a bank. We're going to talk with Professor Zagorski about maybe who's robbing banks these days, because there certainly seems to be fewer bank robberies and therefore fewer bank robbers. Back on Nightside, feel free to join the conversation. We're just trying to lighten it up a little bit here. The political season is over, so feel free to join the conversation. Back on Nightside.
It's Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's News Radio.
Thank you, Nicole. We are talking with Boston University professor. He teaches at the Questrom School of Business, Professor Jay Zagorski, and we're talking about bank robberies and bank robbers. And I want to get to the phones, but I had a question. As I think I mentioned to you, as a lawyer, you're never supposed to ask a question you don't know the answer to. But as a talk show host, when I'm in my talk show mode, I can do that. So my question is that we have sort of this rich history in America when you think about it. You know, the old stagecoach robberies in the old West, bank robberies in the old West, and Matt Dillon and all of those sort of stories. Is bank robberies, our bank robberies, is that an American phenomenon, or do they happen in other countries around the world with about the same frequency?
They're happening around the world. About 6 months ago, there were actually a string of bank robberies in Lebanon that was quite interesting. People were breaking into banks, demanding their own money back. The Lebanese government basically said that people could not take money out of their savings account, because many of these people had money in their savings account and in U.S. dollars, and they had put limits. I don't remember the exact limit. I think it was like maybe $100 a day. And people said, I need money. So people were actually breaking into banks in Lebanon and demanding their own money out.
I don't know if that would qualify as a bank robbery now that you think about
well,
it legally.
Well, going with a mask and a gun.
Well, I guess, yeah, if you're going with a mask and a gun, and you're not talking about your funds, I guess that would be true. Let's go to the phone calls, Professor. Let's go first off to one of my more erudite callers, Steve in Cambridge. Steve, welcome. You're on with Professor Jay Zagorski of the Business School at Boston University. Go right ahead.
Speaking academically, of course, if you wanted to rob a bank, do you think your knowledge would give you a lot of expertise in that endeavor?
Absolutely not. I think robbing a bank, like committing any criminal activity, takes some intestinal fortitude. And I'm not sure I have the intestinal fortitude to walk in and demand things with either a gun or a knife, or a threat of a gun or a knife.
What about the technical expertise, the days,
well,
and so forth?
What's interesting, Steve, is that 85% of all bank robberies are people walking up to the teller with a gun or a knife or pretending they have a bomb and saying, you know, I'm going to cause you harm, give me the money. Only 15% of bank robberies happen what you would and I would probably consider technical expertise, you know, tunneling in or doing something sophisticated like jumping in through the skylight.
Well, my bank robber friend Francis Morgan, who I never met, but I corresponded with him during his time in prison, or during part of his time in prison, he told me that he never used a gun, that he would walk in, he never put a mask on, and he would simply have a note, pass the note very quietly, unobtrusively, and just say calmly to the teller, please put the money in, you know, in the bag, and no one will get hurt. And that was his style. And then he would just walk out. He never ran out. He said he never tried to draw any attention to himself. And he was never prosecuted for a robbery until he made the mistake of getting into a fight on a train somewhere, on an Amtrak train somewhere in Missouri or Kansas. He was taken off the train, and then for some reason, the FBI was there. They weren't looking for him, he didn't think. He had just robbed a bunch of banks in Chicago, and he made the mistake of having, they gave him breakfast in the morning. They held him overnight. They gave him breakfast in the morning, and they picked a fingerprint up off the plate, and they came and they said, Francis. He, of course, gave them a phony name. He said, who's Francis? They said, you're Francis. And they guess gave the list of the bank robberies. And that was it. He went, you know, did
Dan,
not pass.
That was a good show. I heard that. But let me ask.
Yeah, sure.
We have the most famous bank robbers, I think, in the United States over the years, maybe Butch Cassidy, Sundance Kid, John Dillinger. Do you have any that you think were really top-notch, if you will?
If you're asking me the question,
yes.
What I'd really recommend is Willie Sutton was a very famous bank robber. And Willie Sutton wrote a book after he was released from jail where he spent a lot of time called Where the Money Was. And the first chapter, it's by Viking Press. The book's about 50 years old. Maybe you can find it in the library. Where
he
the
was
Money
British,
Was by Willie Sutton.
Wasn't he British?
He talked with the accent, but he was actually born in New York City. Or at least that's what he claims in his autobiography.
Okay.
But the first chapter is a masterclass in what it's like to rob a bank from a bank robber's point of view who is exceptionally intelligent. I really recommend Where the Money Was by Willie Sutton, the first chapter. It is just, I've read it a number of times.
It's, and you reminded me of the famous question that they once asked Willie Sutton. You want to repeat that, Professor?
And they asked him, why did he rob banks? And supposedly the story is that he said, that's where the money is. But here's the interesting thing about banks. Most robbers don't make very much money. Do you know who makes the most money from bank robberies? Hollywood.
Yeah.
I guess so.
The other thing that we should mention is it's not a victimless crime. I mean, some people would say, well, you rob a bank, the bank has plenty of money. I mean, eventually all of us pay for it as, you know, with various forms of federal bank insurance that has to be taken, that has to be taken out. So it's quite,
last
not quite
question, a, Dan.
Sure,
last
go ahead.
Question.
Yep, you got
Have
good
you
questions.
You heard the quote that the crime of robbing a bank doesn't compare to the crime of running a bank?
Yeah, who quoted was that? That sounds like something Mark Twain might have said.
No, I don't know who said that, but somebody.
Yeah. Okay, that's a good one. Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. Good
You're
night,
welcome.
Steve. Yeah, let's go to Hank in New Jersey. I don't know how many bank robbers they have in New Jersey, but Hank, welcome. Next on Nightside, you're on Professor Jay Zagorski. Go right ahead,
Thank
Hank.
For taking the call, Dad.
You're welcome.
You know, I think part of this, the situation why there's not that many bank robbers these days, is direct deposit. Most companies today don't pay you with a check. They give you, but your pay is sent directly to your bank account. Even Social Security, that probably issues more payments to, than any industry in the United States. They require or request that you give an account number, and your Social Security goes right to your account.
I think that's more than a request. I think you're right. It's a requirement, Hank.
Yeah. In fact, let's say you sent me a check. I don't have to go 20 miles from my house to where the bank is. I can just take my son's phone, believe it or not, take a picture of the check, and it gets deposited right into our account.
Hmm.
So I think that may be the reason. It's not the day of the week. It's not the month. It's the fact that there's less cash being transacted.
Well, let's see what that's an interesting theory. Let's see what Professor Zagorski says about that. Professor, I think Hank might be onto something.
I completely agree with Hank. And one of the reasons I started researching bank robberies is I've been writing a book on what happened as we switched to a cashless society. And I was thinking, as we switch to a cashless society, I was expecting bank robberies to go down. And the numbers bear it out. As Hank said, as society uses less and less cash, there's just less cash available to be stolen.
Do you think that we will ever, and this is another dumb question I don't know the answer to, do you think we will ever get to a totally cashless society?
Well, in Sweden right now, only 1% of all transactions happen with cash. 99% happen electronically.
So are there stores, I mean, for example, you know, grocery stores and gasoline stations who will not accept cash? I mean, that's the only way I think we get to a cashless society, if the stores refuse to accept cash.
Dan, if you've flown on an airplane recently and you try and pay cash for a glass of wine or a lunchbox or something like that, I say, I'm sorry, we only accept credit cards. You know, airlines are...
Go ahead, Hank.
At night, everybody in the United States many years ago came home. What'd you do? You emptied out your pockets. You took the change.
Yeah.
You either gave it to your kids or you put it in a little bank. That's
a piggy bank.
When was the last time you had change?
I have change in my pocket right now, Hank. You know me well enough to know that.
Okay, other than you.
Right here.
Look, Dan,
there's the change right there.
Hang up now. Stay- Stay safe.
Thank you, Hank. Okay, let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more questions and more calls from Boston University Professor Jay Zagorski. He teaches at Boston University at the business school, which is called the BU, the Questrom School of Business. This is an area that I find to be fascinating. I hope you do as well. We got a bunch of phone calls. We're going to get everybody in here, I promise. We'll be back on Nightside.
It's Nightside with Dan Ray on WBZ, Boston's News Radio.
All right, let's go to Justin in Marlboro, Massachusetts. Hey, Justin, welcome. You are next on Nightside with Boston University Professor Jay Zagorski. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. And I unintentionally tried to follow Francis Morgan's procedure. And I worked at a gas station, and my boss used to always go to the bank every day. And he was busy, so he asked me to go. And he said, just give him this note in addition to getting the money. I said, okay. And my friend said, what did that note say? He goes, give me all your money. He's like, Justin's not going to read the note because it's not his property. And he's like, he's not stupid. He's going to read it. And then I didn't read it. So he gave it to the woman. Her eyes kind of bugged out. And she said, this is going to take a minute or two. I said, okay, I'm on the clock. Take your time. And the manager came in. He's like, everything's all right? I'm like, yeah. And the next thing, 3 minutes later, three police cars come, and I get arrested.
And, oh, Justin.
And they called my boss, and my boss, so he became spineless and says, I don't know what you're talking about. Oh. And then luckily he asked me, who's your boss? And I said, such and such. Says, well, don't listen to him in the future. And no.
Can I tell you this, Justin? I know you probably might not appreciate this, but you lacked mens rea in that case. You would never have been convicted, okay?
Yeah, I just thought it was funny.
That's a funny story. It's a funny story. The lesson there is always read the notes that your boss gives you to take to the bank. All right. Thank you, Justin.
You're welcome. Bye. Thanks for the call.
Good night. Wow. I never thought we'd get a call like that, Professor. Let me go next to William down in Baltimore. William, next on Nightside from Baltimore, Maryland. Go ahead, William. I'm Professor Jay Zagorski of Boston University, Questrom School of Business. Go ahead.
All right. How you doing, Dan? And how you doing, Chris?
Doing great.
I wanted to point out two items I read about. One was about this bank robber called, his name was Hollywood, and he was like an interstate bank robber in the state of Washington, California. I think it was Idaho and Oregon.
Okay.
He used theatrical makeup, and it was like maybe two or three other guys that was with him. You ever read that story about him?
I have not, but the FBI has given many of these bank robbers all kind of wonderful nicknames. They even have a website. My favorite is the Bling Ring Bandit that the FBI has christened one of these people. But I'm going to be looking up the Hollywood bank robber as soon as we hang up.
Yes, the Hollywood. Yeah, and I think it was written by a lady named Ann Rule, right? She was a crime writer. She just passed away in 2015. But she wrote a lot about, crime writer. And then another story I seen on TV, it was about these guys in Houston, right? But they saying Houston is very popular for bank robbery. Because of the access to expressway ramps and what these guys were doing, it took the FBI and the ATF about 18 months to catch them. They were robbing these armored car drivers when they was loading and unloading the ATM machines, but they found out that they was carrying as much as these cassettes. They call it a cassette where they just pop it in the ATM machines and pull it out anywhere from $200,000 to $300,000. But basically, what it was, this one. Armored car driver shot it out with them. So the next time that they started robbing them, as soon as the guy stepped off the truck, of course, they just killed him and took the cassette and ran out. But they caught him after 18 months. They killed about two or three armored car people like that. And,
well, Houston is such a spread. William, I'm sure you've been to Houston, but Houston is such a spread out city, and there's roads going in every different direction. I guess that's probably
and that's what they were saying, yeah.
The attraction that William, I got packed lines. Normally, I give you much more time, my buddy, but I got to let you go tonight. Okay?
Oh, that's okay. Thank you.
Hope you had a good Thanksgiving with your family down there, William.
You too.
All right, talk to you. Well,
before you go to the next call, Dan,
yes,
William makes a really important point. In the last 20 years, on average, one person is killed in a bank robbery every year, three people are held hostage every year, and five people are injured in bank robberies. So while Hollywood glorifies bank robberies, yeah, there are actually some real human costs.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no doubt. I mean, I got to tell you, every time, like, I'm walking into a supermarket and the armored truck is outside, my tentacles go up. I mean, I'm honest with you. It's like I'm looking both ways, making sure that there's not somebody coming around the corner with a gun, because it just makes me uncomfortable. I don't know if you can identify with that feeling, but you never know. You never know, because obviously those guys could easily be targeted. John on Mission Hill. John, you are next on Nightside with my guest, Professor Jay Zagorski. Go right ahead, John.
Oh, hi, Don. Dan.
Yes,
I'm just sorry to tell you that Francis passed away about 2 months ago.
I know that. No, I mentioned that.
You said he was sick, but...
I talked to him several times. Him. Yeah, go ahead.
He was a childhood friend, and he grew up in Mission Hill.
I've
read South Boston, and his obituary said he was a son of South Boston. And I said he also went by LeBron. That was his original name, but he changed it.
I tried to get
he was
to
a great baseball player when he was a kid too.
I tried to get to his memorial service, unfortunately, but I was working down the Cape that week. Thanks, John. I appreciate it. Thank you for mentioning his name.
Have a good night.
You too. Good night. All right, let me go to Lou in Milton. Lou, got to get you in, and one more here. Go right ahead, Lou.
I just wanted to ask him about cracking safes.
Yes.
Is that done anymore, and what about the history of, breaking a safe, cracking it?
So most of the bank robberies nowadays are not done with safe cracking. As a quick example, the Moss's Vineyard one, they basically waited until the bank employees showed up. Because it's much easier to ask the bank employees what the combination is than it is to crack safes. I think we all get a sort of a misplaced idea of bank robbery from watching Hollywood, where there's always some master safe cracker. But safes have actually gotten a little tougher nowadays to break than they were in Bonnie and Clyde's days.
I can't remember the combination to my, combination locker at the gym. Two to the right, four to the left. I don't know.
Great question. He used to have, he had like a stethoscope on him, right, to hear the click.
Yeah. I think that's like a George Clooney movie or something like that. One of those. Thanks, Lou.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
We're gonna get one more in here. Alex, you're late, but you got about a minute here. Go ahead.
Hey, Professor. Hi, Dan. Good evening. Real quick, don't they use some kind of a dye? And in this case, why didn't they? And the other thing that comes to mind is, in some high-end jewelry stores, they have the doors locked, so the person that's robbed them, can't get out. And why don't banks do this?
Well, good question.
Dye packs are often used when somebody comes up to the teller. I was not at this bank when it was being robbed, but it appears that they followed the employees into the bank. The tellers were not even seated behind the counter, so the tellers didn't even have access. They were pretty much immediately tied up with twisty ties and tape. They didn't have time for dye packs.
Yeah, and the thing about locking the door so that the person gets trapped inside, it can be dangerous. But
very dangerous, very dangerous to the other patrons. And I don't think there's a lawyer in the world who would suggest that as a good practice.
They have it in jewelry stores, so I.
I got to tell you, I still think there's a question of foreseeability there, and if all of a sudden some patron was killed, you could have a great liability. Alex, got to go. Thank you much. Appreciate it as always. Thanks for the call. Professor, this was a fun hour. Thank you very much. Professor Jay Zagorski of the Questrom School of Business. Love to have you back at some point.
I look forward to it, Dan.
Thanks very much, Professor.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. When we get back, we're going to talk about, would you fly on an airplane, a commercial airliner, with only one pilot up on the flight deck? Something to think about right after the 10 o'clock news.